Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. I got back to getting these bloody noses again from the dry weather. I have to have a humidifier. I'm not allowed to blow. I could just be sitting there doing nothing. And all of a sudden, like you walked in here, and
yes.
I have a snot rag in my nose because it's coming out.
So what can you do during the day? Like
I'm
anything?
I'm supposed to just use a saline
solution. I was thinking that,
stay
yeah.
as moist as possible.
Right.
Not blow my nose, which is really awful when it's running.
Yes.
But anyway, the worst thing was is I scratched my eyeball last week.
Oh my God, yes. You're like a health hazard.
Oh my God, I woke up in the middle of the night with this most shooting pain in my eye, in my right eye. I could see okay, but I'm like, what the hell? Jeez, that is so painful. So I made an appointment with an eye doctor, which I have not been to the eye doctor in over 10 years. And so I found this. He was a really cool guy. And he goes, oh, my, you scratched your eyeball.
Oh, wow.
Like, well, how would I have done that? He goes, probably, you know, like sometimes I get those little crusties.
Yep.
You know, I probably
sure,
just woke up
just
in the
like,
middle
yes.
and just, like, scratched my eye with my own crust.
So what do you do? Just drops
he
or
gave
something?
Me some drops. Yeah, it's much better. I mean, it's so much better. It heals really fast, thankfully.
You are so lucky because, you know, I'm still having problems with my pink eye
no
in December.
Way.
Yeah.
Now they look completely clear. You cannot...
Thank God, and my vanity's intact. So as long as I look fine, no, I.
Does it hurt?
No, it doesn't hurt. It's like my vision's just not the same.
Oh boy,
isn't that crazy? That like so apparently, I mean, hopefully it'll go away. But I was on so many rounds of like antibiotic drops and steroids and
Oh boy,
I know eye All stuff.
Right. Highlights of the week, my dear.
So I did Maddox's show on Saturday.
Good for you.
So much fun. The topic was, how should you punish your children? Which right off the bat, I'm like, please, I'm the worst disciplinarian. Don't listen to me. But it was a super hilarious show and he's great. So
he took the side of don't discipline them.
He took the side of
harsh,
like,
harsh discipline.
Like he's like a knuckle sandwich. Like he, you know, he's a jokester.
Oh,
so yeah. So it was super hilarious. And he's got a new co-host on there. So if you want to check that out, it's madcastmedia.com. If anybody, I was like cracking up. I mean, the guy just makes me laugh so hard. So that was kind of my highlight. How about you?
Me? So I worked so much last week. It was a really, really exceptionally busy week. So even on Saturday. So kind of just went to some friend's house on Saturday. By actually, the first yoga teacher out here. We've stayed in contact.
Aww.
And a couple of the other people who used to be in class.
Uh-huh.
So I felt special because we were included in the people she invited. We played a silly game. It was really fun. One of the adults was like, I got to make sure nobody cheats. I'm like, come on.
Oh my God, that's really funny.
You get to see
people. She's a competitive one, exactly.
Well, you really get to see people's personalities when you're going to play a game, right?
Yes.
You really understand what's going
on. Oh my God.
And, you know, the things that you can tell, like, I have that thing too because I used to play this game with this one of my friends when I was in elementary school and she cheated all the time and I didn't really care. I wasn't like competitive, like I had to win, but I at least wanted to win if I was going to win and lose if I was going to lose.
Yeah.
And then she would just deny it and I just simply said, I cannot play this game with you anymore.
Right, exactly. At least own it.
The silly
thing. I'm pretty competitive. Like I remember getting, like I was like 21, I was mad at my friend. We were playing beer pong and like Turks and Caicos and she wasn't taking it seriously. I'm like, come on, we gotta win this. Like it was so funny.
Christopher is insane with competition. Like
really?
With Monopoly. Oh my gosh, we almost got into the hugest fight once we were playing with other people. I'm like, can you just chill?
Right. No.
Oh dear. So much fun. Life is fun. Anyway, had a good time and it's hockey playoff season. I love hockey.
Oh,
so.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's so funny. I've known you for over 10 years and I never knew that.
Well, because it's a recent development.
Oh.
It was a way of bonding with Christopher's daughter because she loves the Blackhawks. And so anyway, we just got really into it about 4 years ago. So you know that at the beginning of each season of football and hockey, we just pick like 8 teams and we bet on them.
Yes,
so
I remember
it's fun
this.
Throughout the whole season. We don't bet anymore.
Right.
We don't bet any less, just that.
Okay.
And so we've
won
in hockey and in football almost every year for the last 5 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's fun. How about you?
I'm going to have you buy a lottery ticket for me or whatever.
That doesn't work. I never win
right,
the lottery.
Exactly. It's just the sports. Well, we should check in about last week's guest.
Yes.
So last week we had the amazing Catherine Woodward Thomas. She is the author of Conscious Uncoupling, Five Steps to Living Happily Ever After. And then also her national bestseller, Calling in the One, 7 Weeks to Attract the Love of Your Life.
I loved how candid she was and honest. You know, when we asked her the question if she was involved, because she was telling us at first about the most beautiful relationship that she's had and Calling in the One. And then it's like later in the story,
but I got divorced. And I love that too.
Yeah, that she could say that and heal from that and then learn from her mistakes.
It was beautiful. And she had a really nice energy. And she said some beautiful things about you after the show. She was just wonderful. So if you missed that show, that's up on LATalkRadio.com.
Yeah. And now we're doing a different kind of breaking up.
Yes.
Right? Conscious Uncoupling. But now we have the author of Breaking Up with Busy. Yvonne Talley has been a healthy lifestyle coach for nearly 20 years. She is a co-founder of Poised Inc., which, among many other things, offers Pilates training to cancer survivors through the Stanford University Cancer Center, and the founder of the Sisterhood of the Traveling Scarves. How cute. A charity that provides headscarves to cancer patients. The meditation and de-stressing specialist for the city of Palo Alto. Talley lives in Northern California. You can visit her online at YvonneTalley.com. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
And to have you on as well. Breaking Up Busy. Okay. How did this come about?
Yeah, how did this come about?
Oh my goodness, need you ask. We're all so busy. But what's really interesting about this is not only are women so busy, but it's become also this kind of culture now within our everyday occurrence. So it's, and there's a status symbol attached to being busy. You know, years ago, not too long ago, our culture was very private, especially in public. And so I always say, you know, I'm fine has become the new I'm busy. Mm-hmm. So I'm fine used to be a polite way of either engaging or exiting a conversation. It was the way we greeted one another. It was kind of, I call it faking happiness. I'm fine projected this image of having it all together. But when economics grow and income rises, time is seen as more valuable. And we don't want to waste it. So we pack in as much as we can in every moment of the day, and we end up busy. You know, very busy. And today, there's a status symbol kind of attached with this being busy. It makes us feel more important and more valuable. And thanks to technology and social media, we're reminded constantly that everyone is busy. So it becomes the new normal. So we become very busy. Time is more important. It is more valuable. And if we're not busy, there's this kind of side-eyeing that goes on. Boy, I wish I was, you know, the other person saying, oh, I wish I was, you know, not so busy like her. I guess she doesn't have a lot to do. But women are particularly busy. Yeah. In fact, we're a good 15% more busy than men are. Oh. And we take the lion's share of the home life. And we, you know, 2/3 of us working outside of the home have school-age children, and we earn less, 80 cents on the dollar. So all of this got set up into this busy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And what I was seeing with my clients and even myself, I thought there's got to be more to this story, and there's got to be a way to help people get out of this frantic, hurried lifestyle. So I set out to write this book.
Wow. It's funny because when I was a little girl, if I would sit on the couch for even like 3 minutes, my mother would call me lazy, and I'd have to get up and go do something. And so for years and years and years as an adult, I've been trying to practice learning how to sit, chill, relax, and really relish and embellish that moment, because in my mind, it's all, oh, I'm lazy. I'm lazy. So the opposite for me of busy is lazy, which is, I think, what's true for so many people if you're not busy so much that you have self-confidence issues.
I 100%
agree. And also, you know, leisure has become the new lazy because there's such this big status attached to being busy. And let's face it, when we see everybody, our reference group, the people that we associate with and identify and that we're sharing our lives with, when we see them busy, we, to fit into that that part, we're going to be busy as well. And unfortunately, I'm looking at the bigger picture here, and unfortunately what ends up happening is when busy pushes its way into our significant relationships, it leaves little room for intimacy, you know, emotional intimacy. And it also leaves very little room for us to kind of get to know ourselves as well.
Yes.
My mother was the same way. You know, she was raising 6 kids, and she there was no downtime. I mean, this woman did not get breaks. Right. You are on 24/7. Yeah. And so I learned that busy pace from her, and that's what we're continuing to do. But now there's this real status attached to it. And a lot of that has to do with technology and the comparison game, and we just get wrapped up into it. And like I said, it just becomes the new normal. But it's, you know, our body and our mind needs downtime to rest and to flourish. So one of the reasons I wanted to write this was to share it with people that both of these things are important. Yes, we have things to get done, but you have to give your body and your mind a rest. It's for mental and physical health.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think so much creativity comes when we have that downtime. That's why, like, the best ideas come when you're in the shower. Like, you're relaxed, you know, and you're not doing stuff.
And, true.
But Yeah. And I guess I was going to ask you, it's interesting you brought up the technology. I would love your thoughts about, is our culture more busy today because of technology? Or do Okay. So what do you feel like it is? Just the idea of it, the status of being busy?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking that. I think, you know, busy is one of those things where people can kind of fluff it off and say, oh, it's kind of a frivolous topic, but it's not. It's as I said, when I see it affected my own health. I mean, my own personal story is that I was so busy taking care of everybody else in my healthy lifestyle practice that I missed my own signals of my own busy lifestyle, and I ended up in the back of an ambulance thinking I was having a heart attack, and it was actually what was identified as a panic attack. And what was interesting was when I got to the hospital and knew that I wasn't having a heart attack at that point, the doctor came in and he goes, yeah, I see this all the time with women. And at first I was really offended that he would say that, and then I got curious. There had to be more going on. So this technology part that it plays into, it's that comparison game. We see what other people are doing, and we start to compare ourselves with, gee, they're doing that. I should be doing that, or I maybe can do that. I never thought about doing X, Y, and Z. There might be a possibility of being able to do that. So we create this kind of lifestyle for ourselves, not only because we're referencing it with the people we're sharing our life with, we're also referencing it with what we're seeing on all social media and the availability and the immediacy of so much technology that it leaves very little time, as you said, to sit on the couch and relax. It leaves very little time for that, and it also becomes unfamiliar for us to even do that. Mm-hmm. When I start teaching meditation, I often have, when I start teaching meditation to somebody new, they often say, gosh, I fell asleep. Does that happen in meditation? And I say, well, part of what's going on is you're not really falling asleep. Your body is relaxing, and it forgot what that felt like. So, you know, all of this technology feeds into it because we have it around us all of the time. And I live in the heart of the Silicon Valley, so it's everywhere.
Right.
It seems to me that there's a lot of fear behind busyness also, like the fear of being judged by other people, the fear that you're not going to make enough money, the fear that your life is going to crumble if you're not always on the rat wheel. Do you notice that too?
Absolutely. In fact, I talk about the four traps, and one of the traps is keeping up. Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to keep up with everybody else? How am I going to fit into this, you know, the game, so to speak? And sure. I see that quite a bit, is that the fear of not being able to keep up, the fear of not doing the best and being the best. Mm-hmm. So that drives a lot of this behavior. It's highly competitive. Again, that goes back to your question about technology. We see it constantly. You know, I have a millennial daughter, and she, when we look at her Instagram, I look at her, and I'm like, this looks like a whole different life. I mean, because we can manufacture anything now, and it's so, you know, it's right there in everybody's face, and we're also seeing what everybody else is doing. So it does, I think it does elevate that sense of fear and insecurity and, you know, just how am I going to keep up, so to speak. I mean, you see, look at, this is a simple example. Go to the airport and watch people line up for Section 1, Section 2, Section 3.
Uh-huh.
They will be the first to get in line, even if they're Section 4 to board. And they'll stand off to the side. I find people so interesting. They'll stand off to the side so that when Section 4 gets called, they're right there in front. That's the level of competition in everything. I mean, that's so a simple funny. Example. But we see it in everything that we do now.
there's also so much pressure on people, like, if, quote unquote, if you want to be successful, you have to be on social media pretty much all the time, posting and liking and posting and getting followers and all that stuff. It's like insane.
Yes, and if you're over 25, yeah, it's a foreign language. I mean, it really, it's a full-time job. That's why so many people hire a social media manager, because they not only have to be able to know what they're doing, mm-hmm, and maneuver in the landscape of social media, but it takes up a tremendous amount of time. I mean, when we talk about technology, and let's just take the phone, for example, we touch the phone 80 times a day, and the millennials touch on average their phone or use their phone 150 times a day.
Wow.
Check their phone. I should have said check, because we literally touch our phone on an average of 2,600 times a day. Well, what does that equate to? That's 5 hours a day.
Oh my God.
Just engaging with the phone.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, with your airport thought, the same thing. I went to the airport a couple weeks ago, and I was watching, and all the young people, while they're in line, are on the phone. And it was super interesting. The older people were just standing there, you know, like we used to do without the phone. And it was just so interesting to just watch. I mean, I imagine that the young people, when they get older, I mean, it will be really hard if they don't have their phone. Or, I mean, that is like their security blanket. I mean, it's like what to do in every moment. You
hang
know?
On one second. I have to tell you something really funny, because I was walking in the mall the other day. Sometimes I just walk for exercise. Uh-huh. And there was the sweetest I should have taken a picture, but of course I would have had to have his permission. There was a man, he was 85. Maybe uh-huh. He had a half red newspaper, okay, half on his lap, half to the side of him. His glasses were sort of slouching. Uh-huh. He was closing his eyes and just going to sleep. Oh. Right in the middle. I was like, oh, that's nirvana.
Yes.
That's so sweet. You would never see that in a teenager.
My kids don't even know what a newspaper is.
Right.
They think it's a magazine. You know, which is even, you know, it's really funny.
Well, they also think it's very, you know, well, we could look at it from a planet standpoint, you know, as far as a resource goes, paper. But it's something that they've never experienced. I know my daughter, she was using a computer in preschool. That's when they started them out on the, you know, with the little games. And I just thought that was fantastic. And now I think back and I think, oh my goodness, mm-hmm, you know, that's just so early to put a child in front of a computer. Right. And the thing that we have to really take a look at, I think, not just as women being busy, but what is it that we're teaching the generation coming up behind us, and how does it impact our relationship with our elders, such as the 85-year-old man sitting on the bench? I mean, it's very difficult to be emotionally intimate with somebody when you're multitasking in four different directions, and when social media and, you know, technology is part of that, it becomes really difficult. And the one thing with young people that I think that we have to really embrace is they communicate different. They have a whole different way. They do not consider sitting at a table out to dinner checking their social media or phone, or for whatever reason. They don't consider that rude. For me, it's just, you don't bring your phone to the table. That's mm-hmm. just not something that's a part of my culture. So we have to find a ground where we can meet in the middle. Mm-hmm. And just to your point of all the kids, the younger people looking down at their phones, mm-hmm. from a coach standpoint, from teaching people physical fitness and wellness for so many years, I look at what is happening to the body from a structural level of having their head thrust forward and down, shoulders rolled forward, collapsing the whole chest region. So, you know, those are just other things that we can look at, not anything else about what it's doing to our brain. Mm-hmm. How are we engaging and handling our stressors? I mean, all of those things are a part of being busy as well.
Mm.
And how many
we're too busy, I should say.
Accidents we have because we're not paying attention.
Oh, sure. You know? I see people all the time on the road, on the phone, all the time.
All the time. I saw a highway patrol the other day, handheld, right up in front of him, dialing. And I'm like, you are such a bad role model. I really wanted to pull him over and say, this is just offensive and unacceptable, or reported, but you know, I really didn't.
Do you know what I did? I downloaded something like a do not disturb when I'm driving. So,
oh, good. Yeah. So if somebody connects mm-hmm. with you, it just automatically replies to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good.
Yeah. Your phone does have that. Mm-hmm. And we are learning how addictive a phone is now, and that's just one piece of technology. I think when we all started using a phone, we maybe checked our phone, I don't know, a couple times a day, maybe four mm-hmm. or five times a day. And as I said, now we're touching it, literally touching, and that includes texting as well, 2,600 times a day. So it's a lot, and that's just one piece of technology. So
right.
we have to find organic, realistic, practical ways to move out of that space, not entirely, but to find a balance between the two, because technology is not going away. We have to learn how to be friends with it, and friends support and nurture one another. They don't take over our time. So that's, I think it's really important to have that mindset when we're talking about breaking our busy patterns, and also to realize the health benefits of it. It's just so important that we have that space of time where you said, you know, just sitting being quiet actually feeds the brain.
Yeah.
So it actually lowers the cortisol. It, you know, we can increase our dopamine, improve our focus just through a few deep breaths and taking some time to be quiet. So it doesn't have to be these big, huge, vast leaps.
Right.
It can be just one small change at a time.
Hey, maybe we can drop into understanding neuro-linguistic programming a little bit. I think that's a really fascinating topic, and you mentioned that. So can you first just explain what that is and how that's related to and helpful in this decreasing our busy bee behavior?
Yeah. Well, neuro-linguistic programming is something that's been around since the early 70s, and it uses a variety of techniques. It's really about improving communication and personal growth. And so the neuro refers to the neurology and how we process our experiences via our senses. And the linguistic refers to the language we use to communicate those experiences. And we apply meaning to the information we decipher via our senses to develop our own unique language. We all have it. So the programming is how we communicate that information to ourselves and others to achieve our goals. And the results are strategies for what we do and what we want to create, and sometimes what we don't want to create. And I've found that the NLP is even more potent when blended with mindful practices such as meditation and positive visualization. And so I use that quite a bit, the two together. At the core, neuro-linguistic programming is about shifting unresourceful, which can also be identified as negative, but they're just unresourceful habits, into resourceful strategies. So, and there's a variety of ways and techniques to do that to help people move through a situation. So instead of really focusing deeply, deeply on the past and spending a lot of time there, which the past is valuable for finding answers, but we want to really shift what's going on in the moment. How can I better suit myself and find solutions and healing in the moment? So that's really, in a nutshell, what neurolinguistics, how I use neurolinguistics with mindfulness.
Can you give us
and
an example?
Practical solutions.
Yeah, can you do a practical example, or even do something with Kelly and I, like a little
programming?
As far as neurolinguistics?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so if you take a moment to just kind of settle into some deep breaths, one of the things when people start to get into, and mind you, these are not pure neurolinguistic programming techniques. As I said, I combine them with the mindfulness end of it as well. So we have to stop and think, what is it that I want to feel today? So we would take a moment to kind of really get that feeling of, I want to feel happy, I want to feel joyful. All right, so you get that. And then you imagine you're seated, and you're seated in a movie theater. And out in front of you is the big screen. And you're going to create now that picture of what that feeling or what that day is going to look like. And you're going to tell yourself a story, right, of what you want that day to look like and how you want to feel in it. You can give it color. Is there sound? Are there people there? What you're feeling, what the sensation is as far as the weather goes, the surroundings, and you really create that picture. So this is a conscious storytelling that you would be doing. Now, what happens when you do this, you start to disconnect with whatever else is going on around you, and you get into that feeling of whatever it is, I'm using happiness, calm, excitement, joyfulness, accomplishment, whatever it is for you. And you walk yourself through that, right across the screen, you walk yourself through that, your day. And what's happening to you on a body level is you're lowering your blood pressure. And again, you're decreasing that cortisol. you know, you're letting your body begin to relax and fill up with some feel-good hormones. Mm-hmm. And on a subconscious level, you've now given your day a rehearsal. Does that make sense?
That's really... So it, on this movie screen picture, are you picturing what it's... Like, I used Calm. Are you picturing sort of what your day is going to look like if you are feeling that way? Okay.
So let's say you start out the day and you wake up on Monday morning and you've got three back-to-back meetings mm-hmm. that you know are going to be challenging. So, okay, well, how is that going to help you to go in with that mindset of three back-to-back meetings of challenging? So now you want to, we do this a lot in sports training too, by the way. This has been around for a long time. Mm-hmm. Instead of actually throwing the ball into the hoop, we're going to actually visualize the ball going into the hoop, retrieving the ball, how I feel when the ball comes back, and continuous kind of cycle. So the movie screen is you're watching a movie, you're creating a story, you're the director of that story. And you're putting yourself in that position. You're walking into the building. You have a sense of calm and relax, of confidence. You know, you might have your coffee in your hand. You know, you have what you're looking about what you wear and how comfortable you feel with that. I mean, really paint the story.
Sure.
Up the elevator, into the office. You walk in. You create the situation that you want, basically. Mm-hmm. So that would be kind of a visual technique that you could do to kind of set your pace for the day. Mm-hmm. And then another one that we do is called the Circle of Excellence. I do this a lot with clients before they walk in to speak before a group. This is kind of the fast forward of what a Circle of Excellence is. You create a situation of all of the attributes and strengths that you have. You bring them into this Circle of Excellence, and you mm-hmm. step out again, and then you step in, and each time you bring those feelings of excellence up even more and confidence even more. And then I always tell everybody to kind of take that circle and wrap it up and put it in their pocket, and then they've rehearsed what it is they're going to do. And we already know that the mind is much more effective and can actually achieve things if we've done a mental rehearsal, and that's what that is.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Two different ways of doing it.
I love it.
So we are talking with Yvonne Talley. She's the author of Breaking Up Busy, if you just tuned in, and these are real-life solutions for overscheduled women. So it's interesting you said 15% women are 15% more busy than men. And is that because women are still taking on, like, double roles, you know, as the mothers and as the workers, or why do you think that is?
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And I think that might be a little bit underreported, too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different stats out there, but when we look about, and also, the great question, by the way, and also what happens is we're not only continuing to taking the lion's share of the domestic life and child care, so those are what we call unpaid work. So when we have unpaid work, it just means that we have to work more to be able to do what we need to do. Mm-hmm. That's the first part of it. And then there's also, men are not uncomfortable about saying, I'm going to go hit some golf balls on Saturday. Hey, I'm going to the gym before I get home. So that's part of our culture, too, and I'm not making any judgment with that.
Sure.
It's just part of it. Men are, generally speaking, and these are generalizations, very more comfortable and good about taking their time. Mm-hmm. They don't judge it. They take it because it works for them, and it's something that they've done before. And I think we can take a page out of their playbook and allow us the permission, if you will, to do the same. And I think relationships are much healthier when we both do that equally. So this is going to be about women stepping forward and really setting their boundaries about what it is they need and not feeling uncomfortable. Well, we can feel uncomfortable, but we still need to ask. We still need to create that space for us to have that time, and no one's going to give it to us unless we ask for it.
Mm-hmm. And
to share the load.
Not feeling guilty about it. I think sometimes when I feel like I've taken too much time, I feel like this gnawing sense of guilt, and then I say the same thing I say to my clients is save guilt for when you've done something wrong. You
yes.
have done nothing wrong. You know, it's fascinating how much we're programmed to believe that that's just not it's not acceptable. It's like,
yes.
in the middle of the day, you took a nap?
Yes.
I'll see Christopher. I can tell sometimes that he's taking a nap. I'm like, what? I didn't have 4 minutes to breathe today. You took a nap?
Uh-huh. Right. And I actually, that's the point that I mean is that we can learn from that.
Sure.
There's no reason why we can't do that. And I put everything into a health bucket, so to speak. Whenever I make a decision or I'm working with a client and they say, I feel guilty about that. And by the way, this is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can only speak about the clients that I work with and the women that I speak with. Guilt is constant all the time. I didn't do enough long enough for enough people.
Right.
And until we can get to a point where we know, you know, sometimes good enough is the best, and that's just fine. We have to get okay with not always being in that perfection mode all the time. So I always take it back to a health standpoint. I know I'm improving my blood flow. Mm-hmm. I know my brain is getting healthy.
That's nice.
I know the soft tissues in my body and my muscles and everything are rejuvenating. Nice. So I'm going to take a 10-minute nap or a 15-minute nap to be able to have that happen, or I'm going to take a walk, mm-hmm. or I'm going to go run around the block or walk around the block, whatever it is. We can start small and move in that direction, because really what we're doing is developing habits.
Yeah,
true. Yeah. Hey, can you tell us about what you refer to as the need/want connection? What is that, and how does it relate to our goals?
Right. Well, that's a biggie, because what happens, and especially when I've spoken to the women that I've worked with, that need-want connection a lot of times gets... doesn't get handled in a way that's effective for them. So that's assuming that we know what we want. So mm-hmm. the need-want connection is it's just a simple way to organize your process for moving towards a particular goal. So we often get stuck when making tough decisions because we're confused what we might need. And the want represents the desire, and the need represents the essentials mm-hmm. required to bring that desired forward. So we have to remember the needs are kind of the mechanics of it. So many times when I'm working with a client, they say, well, I want this. And I'll ask them, well, what do you need mm-hmm. to be able to get that? So a few of the questions might be, you know, what do I really want? And what will change for me when I have what I want? And that's a key question, because they'll say, I want X. And when I ask them, well, what will change for you? Blank stare, because they haven't taken the time to explore that question. So once we can connect that need, the essentials, kind of the nuts and bolts, with the want,
mm-hmm.
they will flow together and they will support one another in getting to that desired outcome.
And can you give a real life example of that? Like, let's say somebody says they want a Porsche.
I'm sorry?
What if someone says that they want a Porsche?
Okay, so what do you need to be able to get to that want? Well, one of the things I'm going to have to do, I could talk about several clients. For instance, a client that comes in and says, you know, I want to lose weight. But back to the Porsche, so what do you need to do? Well, I need to spend less money in this category so I can save more money.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a practical thing. I need to start to investigate where I might be able to find the best deal. So, you know, you go through the list of being able to get those needs met. And how about if the need comes up, well, I want to feel better about myself. Well, that to me is kind of a red flag in being that, okay, we need to explore that a little bit more, because a car, a house, all of those things might work temporarily, but we're not going to be able to get really to the want, because mm-hmm. you've confused the want with something rather than being able to fill that within yourself first. So I'm really clear about when I'm working with somebody with a need-want connection. When a client comes in, I want to lose weight. Well, tell me more about that. Well, I'm tired of, I don't like fitting in my clothes anymore. I don't like the way I fit in my clothes anymore. Well, tell me how you would like to fit. What do you need to make, you know, what do you need to make that happen? And that always opens up more questions for them to explore this idea. What will change for me when I have what I want? And what do I need that will move me towards mm-hmm. what I really want? And then the other question is, why now?
Right.
What makes now different? Because if we can answer the why now, that's going to help answer that question about what's going to change for me. So, you know, just by taking three, I think in the book there's four or five questions. And they're just taking those questions step by step, and that's really what it's about, one step at a time. Let's explore that need-want connection. I know I want chocolate, you know, the chocolate cake. That's an easy example right now. But is that mm-hmm. going to get me what I really want? can I find an adjustment for that that's going to continue to keep moving me on my path? And, you know, what can I do to make that need and that want connect?
You should know that when Kelly wants chocolate, there is nothing that she can't do to get it.
I
just
will push
just
people out
so
of the
you
way.
Know.
Exactly, my dark chocolate. And once when I was pregnant.
Not mine when I meet her.
Yes. Once when I was pregnant, I had the craving for ice cream. Like it was like a movie. Like, I was in line, and I think I was like maybe the seventh one. I was like irate. Like move out of the way. Like,
Kelly's
so
coming.
Yeah.
With which? Oh, must.
Remy, with my first
okay,
one.
Okay, right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, okay,
well,
so
I say when we're pregnant, all bets are off. I remember being at Baskin and Robbins and having a double stack and then going, I'm pregnant. I'm going to go have another one. I'll never forget that. And I had no guilt whatsoever. So I hear you on that.
I love it.
They're all bets are off when we're pregnant. We can eat what we want as far as I'm concerned. But it does
agreed.
Make the other game at the end of it. And once we've delivered our children, it makes it a little bit difficult or longer to get to that want. So.
So I have a question because I feel like the quintessential busy person, I imagine them saying, yes, I want to be less busy, but I have so much going on in my life. I have to do X, I have to do Y, I've got to pick up my kids, I've got to do this. So what kind of advice do you give those people who really legitimately want to be less busy, but they have so many obligations in their life?
Yeah. Well, I think that's most of us. The obligations aren't going to go away. I always say the housework isn't going to disappear. The kids aren't going to disappear, although sometimes we'd like them to for a while at least. So we have to there's a technique I call descheduling, and it's just a way to edit your time and to reduce the extraneous items. So it's about making, you know, going back to root one, and that would be to make a list. And again, remember, this is a behavior. It's also kind of what I call the juice that we get when we look at the day and we go, again, let's not forget about the fact that when we're busy, it gives us a sense of importance. It makes us feel important. And then we get used to that feeling, and then it becomes a habit. So this is really about breaking a habit. So we can start the day, we make the list, and then, with all honesty, take a look at that list.
Right.
And then cross one thing off. Or delegate something out to somebody else. Or, you know, I always say, is it really important to get it done? Can it go to the list tomorrow? Because 9 times out of 10, you know, when you walk into a store and you go, oh, gosh, or I should say this for myself, I love that dress, I've got to have it. My little way of getting myself around that is I'll ask them to put it on hold, because 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to come back in 2 hours of the next day to get that, because it's just, yeah, it was in the moment type of a thing. The same thing kind of, you know, it's the same thing with descheduling.
Yeah.
Take one of those things off. Start to really practice on getting less done and having more enjoyment. Remember, it's about the quality, not the quantity of the things we get done. And don't fool ourselves with multitasking. It doesn't work. The brain cannot function and decipher between two dissimilar functions at the same time. So we end up spending more time and making more mistakes. We don't remember what we've learned when we multitask, and it just ends up taking more time. So if we could switch the multitasking to doing one thing at a time, crossing one thing off our list, and start there. And just start there. Like, is this really important? Is this something that somebody else could do? And again, I want to go back to, again, general statement, what men do, they're very good at delegating as a rule. And that's another thing. Alpha women are terrific at that, and so are the perfectionists, I would say. But delegating is really important on so many levels. It's important for our children to learn those responsibilities and boundaries, and it's when we set good boundaries, we teach our children to do the same.
And I've always found it to be very helpful for myself anyway, when I categorize things with I have to versus I prefer to, or my life might be easier if this gets done today, but at the same time, I don't want to compromise my health and well-being. So actually, what's mandatory on my to-do list every day is I have to have some me time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great.
Excellent.
Yeah.
This
is
Yay!
Because I know it's essential. Otherwise, I'm really cranky. I'm a cranky bitch if I don't get to take my walk or exercise
I was thinking,
or something.
Is your me time the walk?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, that I love what you say because that's so honest. I'm the same way. I have a daughter who's a millennial. She's going to be 26 here soon, and we joke about that. She'll look at me and she'll say, "Mom, you need to go for a run." And I'm like, "You're right, I do." And she lives on the East Coast, and she'll call me and she'll say, "Oh, I had such a tough day. I'm going to go for a run. I'll call you afterwards. I can't talk right now." Mm-hmm. And then, sure enough, you know, because you take that time, you listen to your body, and you do whatever it is for that me time. And I always call, you know, I always also, one of the other tips is it a should or is it a could?
Sure.
Should I be less busy today or could I be less busy today? The could is always going to open up more possibilities.
Right.
Period.
Instead of the judgment.
The should is going to make us feel guilty.
Yeah.
Right. And also the more we take ownership of our choices that we make about how we spend our time instead of always feeling like we're victimized by the clock.
Great example. Great, yes, absolutely. And I want to go back to that healthy boundaries because, we don't set boundaries to keep people out. We set boundaries to make space for ourselves. And when we do that, mm-hmm. And my time is important. Sure. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. I mean it in a balanced way. Again, if we're raising children or even our coworkers, whoever we're sharing the space with. Mm-hmm. That is such a gift to them as well because we teach them how to do that, and we also quit the guessing game. Did mom really mean that? Did honey really mean that? Did so-and-so mm-hmm. really mean that? Oh, yes, because when so-and-so says such-and-such, they mean it. Mm-hmm. So those boundaries are critical in all walks of life and everything that we do, male, female, children, big people, little people, whatever it is.
I think over time, too, I wonder if getting older, you sort of learn how precious your time is and that you can say no. Like, I feel like maybe even, 10 years ago, every time the phone rang, it was like, oh, I got to pick it up. I got to talk to this person. I might miss them. Or even if I wasn't in the mood or something like that, or I have to fulfill this obligation. And over time now, it's like, you know what? I can't talk right now. I need to, I need this moment for me or whatnot. And you learn to prioritize, I think, a little bit more.
Yeah. And you just said something really interesting. You asked me about NLP earlier when you just said I can't talk right now. Mm-hmm. In NLP, if I was working with you, I would.
Hello, did we lose her?
Uh oh,
Yvonne, we can't hear you if you can hear us. Well, we've been talking with Yvonne Talley. She is the author of Breaking Up with Busy: Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women.
And why don't we try to call her back?
I mean, it looks like the call is still on, but maybe she's overscheduled and busy.
Uh-oh.
All right, we'll try to call her back.
Okay. Yeah, this is all fascinating. I really love the NLP stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Were you familiar with that beforehand?
Yeah,
Hello, this is Yvonne.
Okay,
hi,
great.
We lost you for a second.
We said you were overscheduled and busy. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. That's what Kelly just said. She says, she's probably being too busy.
Yeah, exactly.
Phone was busy.
That's so funny. Okay, so you were saying about the NLP,
you
I
would
can't
change
talk right
instead
now.
Of I can't talk to what?
Oh, yes, thank you. So instead of I can't talk right now, I'm choosing not to talk right now. Mm. This isn't the space I want to be in. And it sounds very manufactured, mm-hmm. and it is. But what happens again is we start to retrain our brain on how we can communicate, and that makes a connection with how we actually speak. Mm. So because that's that linguistic part of it. So, just being really mindful of the words that we're using. I use this a lot when I work with parents that are, trying to create more harmony within the home, which is all of us. And, we'll do what I call a family agreement instead of family rules. Mm-hmm. And that one word changes everything because even the kids they've got skin in the game, as they say, because they're making an agreement. They're not being told what to do. They're making an agreement. When people know that they have some ownership, they're going to be much more likely to be in harmony with what that agreement is all about. So just, words alone can change everything on how we communicate.
I have a great example of that. My daughter, she's an Ayurvedic practitioner. Are you familiar with Ayurveda?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So she's your daughter's age also. She's 25. And so just the other day, she calls me sometimes and says, Mom, I'm going to take this other class. I want to learn about this. I'm like, that's awesome. She says, I love this new teacher. She gives us home play instead of homework. She says, it's called Home Play. I said, I think every school on the planet should adopt that.
And then what we is got it?
Home Play. Instead of calling it homework,
yeah,
she, at home, these are the things that she plays with
love
of what
it.
She's learning in class.
But it's play. still tasks, but it's just a different name.
It's still, quote, work, but it's really, why does it have to be seen as work? If you're enjoying and you're wanting to learn something, and then she went into this whole diatribe of it. It was so fucked up that we had to do 6 hours of stupid homework after school for no particular reason, didn't learn anything else. It was just to keep us busy.
Yeah.
Like, you should listen to the show today.
Exactly.
That's a really good point. Look at where busy is within our schools. Look at the amount of homework that they send home now with kids in second grade.
My son's in TK, transitional kindergarten, and he has homework, which I think is just so crazy. I mean, just feels like,
you know, their little bodies just getting to school and having that regimen, which is great. We want them to have that, but that's enough. There you go. That's enough.
So.
You mentioned earlier about perfectionism. I can see that that's one that really gets in people's way. And I love the when you said the before that, good enough. Like, I've always really adopted the idea of good enough parenting, like trying to be the perfect parent or the perfect spouse or the perfect employer or employee. It just, it's a miserable life.
Yes.
It's really a miserable life.
Yes.
It's stressful.
Yeah.
It doesn't even provide the hopes and the dreams that you're really hoping it will.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree, and that perfectionist is certainly what I write about. Is, you know, that's part of the traps, or, you know, or the keeping up and the being all, like you just said, everything all of the time. And when you're a perfectionist, what's interesting about that is your perfectionist is highly driven and wants to accomplish numerous goals and is methodical and detail oriented, and, you know, often many times are artistically creative and see all things beautiful. I mean, they bring light and color to our world, so to speak. But when it starts to dominate and the crave for approval and praise overrides, that's when they get really entrenched in that perfectionistic behavior. And I always try to say, you know, it's progress, not perfection.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Progress. How far did I get today? Okay, that's progress. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just changing how we speak to ourselves.
Sure.
It's progress. It wasn't perfect, but I made progress, and that's important. And so some of the self-care for that is what I call play it safe, SAFE. And so the safe is say what you need and desire, very important, and actions, put them into words and motion, and face your fear and walk through it. Because when we get stuck in fear, that's when we collapse our creativity, and we have to be able to find solutions. We have to continue to be creative, and saying what you want and putting it into action and identifying your fears will allow you to evolve. And that's just a blueprint for the perfectionist to be able to get out of that. Because many of us, I'm a recovered perfectionist, and many of us, you know, there was a time where everything that I had to, and I grew up with a perfectionist, so it was easy for me to learn how to be that. So I had to unwrap that and get out of that. And now often I'll say to myself, okay, I made progress. And that feels good. I made progress instead of saying, I didn't do it all. That, so there's a difference.
That is a beautiful ending because can you believe it? We are out of town. Yeah. Out of
time. Oh, my goodness.
I know.
Yes.
So we've been speaking with Yvonne Talley, the author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. And please tell us, where can people find you? Where can they find the book? If you have any other events or book signings coming up, please feel free to promote away.
Oh, thank you. Well, shameless promotion. The website is YvonneTalley.com. I have a book launch at Books, Inc. in Palo Alto, California on May 3rd at 7 p.m. And the book was released today.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. Honored that we have you on today.
Yeah, we're the first.
Today.
Exactly.
Yay.
That's great.
Yeah.
On Amazon.
Yes, I got to share it with you. Thank you.
Fantastic. And that's on Amazon and all the sites, I imagine.
It's on all the sites, and it's in bookstores today.
Okay,
yeah,
and that is spelled YvonneTalley, just in case people miss one of those N's.
Right.
This is great.
Thank you so much. Really fascinating.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Great advice.
So
and next week, I'm very excited. So Prowler's holistic vet is coming on the show. She's going to tell us about the various types of alternative medicines that we can use with our pets, such as acupuncture and herbs and things like that. And she's fantastic, and I'm very excited. She's
taking
great care of Prowler, and I'll have an update from the vet, the cancer vet, tomorrow.
That's great.
Yep. So we'll see how that little bugger's doing.
Good. And, we have a name change for our Instagram. It's at Two Shrinks. That's our new Instagram.
Spelled out.
TWOSHRINKS. So that's our new Instagram. So follow us there. And Facebook, the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Thanks so much. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Only on LA Talk Radio.